Spirits of French Lick is proud to introduce the Lee Sinclair 4-Grain Bottled and Bond Bourbon. This 4-year-aged, double-pot distilled, non-chill-filtered bourbon has creamy, round, and lifting notes with caramel and vanilla, followed by apple, mint, graham cracker, and ginger, as well as cardamom. The finish is slightly French walnut, resolving the sweet, fruity, almost ground cherry and white pepper. Our spirits are available for tasting and purchase inside the French Lick Winery and Distillery. Spirits of French Lick. Respect the grain. Please enjoy responsibly.
Hey, Scotchy Bourbon Boys fans, this is Alan Bishop, Indiana's Alchemist of the Black Forest. So I'm tuning in here today to tell you all about the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute channel on YouTube. If you're at all interested in the art of distilling, whether it be home distilling or professional distilling, and the intense geekery that goes into that process, then check out the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute on YouTube. I promise you're going to learn something you didn't know before about the art.
Welcome back to another podcast of the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. Tiny here. That was Kenny Fuller of the Luca Mariano Old Americana Band. Thanks, Kenny, for doing the theme song. Tonight, we got a special podcast with a guest, a special guest. Somebody who has done something that's very hard. We'll get into this to do, and I'll explain later. But we have... It's Bronner. I got it right. I suck at names. And it just was, I was like, you don't know what kind of anxiety I go through with that. But of Buzzard's Roost. And welcome, Jason.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, good to be here.
And then also CT is joining us along with Super Nash and Barrelhead making another appearance. You're starting to... be around. Maybe I was wondering, are you going to stick around?
Well, enjoying it. Yeah, I'm going to.
Yeah, it's like I always feel safer when you're on the podcast. All right. We're the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. www.scotchybourbonboys.com for all Scotchy Bourbon Boys merchandise, t-shirts. We even got these little refrigerator magnet bottle openers and Glencairns, this and Crystal Glencairns and bourbon balls. So check that out. And then we're on all the social media, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and X. And then along with all the podcast formats, Apple, iHeart, and Spotify are the main ones. But anything you listen to, you'll be able to hear us. I got that out of the way, and I didn't stumble. So there you go. Usually. Now, Jason, just so you know, we are like known for technical fuck-ups all the time. So that might now so far it's been going good. So just but if something goes south, we're kind of used to it. So don't worry about it. All right.
That's been my whole adult life.
All right, CT, we're ready to go. And Jason kind of are they were able to get together, and I have to thank you, CT, for setting this up. Much appreciated. Anytime I get help with that, I really appreciate it. So, kind of go over to start us off.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Jason You've already introduced him, and we met back in at Bardstown Bourbon Festival. Jason has been doing this a lot longer than I have, and I've learned more about him as we go. Andy and I, Barrelhead, went down last Friday, two Fridays ago, I guess now, and Jason was great and took us through a lot of the stuff in downtown Louisville that they're doing there and his experience. But I think that it was exciting to learn how it's stemmed from the restaurant and then kind of came from there, because I don't think I knew all that before. So I think, Jason, tell us a little bit about the history of you, what got you going. And, you know, some people may have heard this story before, but, you know, a lot of our listeners and viewers may not have.
Sure. You know, it's hard to mention where I am today without the inception of Bourbon's Bistro. You know, I started out in my whole career. I've been in the restaurant business, started my first restaurant when I was 25. I mean, actually 21. I'm sorry. It was 21. And then started, you know, Bourbon's Bistro in 2005. So we're coming up on our 19th year over there. I enjoyed the restaurant business, but I also enjoyed bourbon. Thought they would do really well together. Wanted a great, great restaurant with a great bar, a great bourbon bar. And so that's what we set out to do. And, you know, after doing a bunch of research and, you know, we're basically just out to educate the world about bourbon. At that time, if you think of, you know, even if the audience where your bourbon trek was in 2005, not a lot of people were really into it. The distilleries didn't know what to do with me. Because we were having bourbon dinners, I think we probably have done some of the first bourbon dinners in the country. We would have a master distiller from, at that time, there were 10 major distilleries, you know, so we'd have somebody of interest come once a month. We would do it once a month. And so somebody got two times in a year, you know, those in the first years, because there weren't enough distillers to go around. So we also did flights. Like I said, we were out to educate people about bourbon. So I kind of brought that back from wine country. You know, they did flights of wine out there. I thought it'd be great to not have to buy a bottle of bourbon and just be able to taste it as compared to something else. So once again, it was all about the educational aspect of it. Started, you know, the first bar restaurant to do a single barrel from Four Roses. And, you know, had a single barrel relationship with all of the distilleries over the years, and, you know, probably done over 100 single barrels just through Bourbon's Bistro. So been in all of the distilleries, been to all their single barrel programs, you know, met all the distillers. I consider most of them friends of mine. And it's just every day I would learn from them, you know, so. Being in the restaurant business that long and being in the bourbon, you know, around the bourbon business that long, you know, instead of tasted some of the best in the world, I think. And I've had a collection of old bourbon and just decided it was time to, I thought maybe I could start my own brand or, you know, my own distillery. You know, so started asking around and talking with people. I met my business partner, Judy Hollis. She was just retiring from corporate and got to talking to her. So we decided we were going to put together an LLC and try to get a distillery funded. I think we got to about the 10-yard line and it just some things went south or whatever. And yeah, I'm pretty kind of strict or old school about the way I like my whiskey, and I like a traditional, and I wanted to make, you know, a traditional whiskey. I kind of wanted to make some stuff that that I would see in the anywhere 50s and 60s whiskeys. So that's what we were out to look at a distillery, and kind of fell a little bit short. So then we had to source our whiskey. You know, come up to 2019, 2018, maybe even a little bit before that, started talking with Andrew Weebrink from Independent Stave Company. He was doing some really cool things with some barrels down there, and he said I ought to, you know, come down and sample some of his experiments since we were going to be sourcing whiskey. He had mentioned we could do some secondary aging, really cool. And, you know, I knew through sitting with all the distillers that 70% of the flavor comes from the barrel. So it was something to look at. You know, if I'm sourcing just like everybody else is, what makes me different? I mean, there's great blenders out there. I think I've got a pretty decent palate. But what makes us different? And so I really looked into this, what Andrew was doing with these barrels. And so we started sourcing our whiskey. We're very transparent about what we do. We source from MGP in Indiana. We ship it to Bardstown Bourbon Company, where we re-barrel everything. We have 17 different proprietary barrels that I've developed with the help of Independent Stave Company. They're proprietary to us. And if people out there are familiar with the Makers 46 program, you know how they use the staves to kind of enhance the flavor of Makers, some of their single barrels. We don't use staves. We use whole barrels. And it's kind of the same concept, but we, you know, we do a lot of heavily toasting, and we're big on the number one char. And there's a whole, you know, hours we could talk about that, and I'll field some questions there, but I want to come up for air and give you, you know, you know, that's kind of that's it in a nutshell. That, you know, the company started for, you know, we just wanted to produce good whiskey, and we wanted to produce it in a traditional way. And some people say, you know, you're finishing. Well, we're not using any added flavors at all. As far as, you know, there are some people that finish in rum barrels and scotch barrels and port barrels or whatever, tequila barrels, I guess, or vice versa. But ours are first run barrels, brand new cooperage. And we're just looking into really the science of what the wood does to the whiskey. And if you think that 70% of the flavor comes from there, that's something you ought to look at.
So, awesome. Just real quick.
Different way of doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but so it being another new number one charred oak barrel that you're putting it into, right? So the time in that barrel has to be kind of short, I would imagine, with it already aged. You've already purchased an aged bourbon or aged rye. And then it goes in there again. I mean, it's got to be, you got to be watching it almost right away to not get it over stimulated or over oaked.
I think you're definitely onto something, but you know, ours will sit in the barrel anywhere from 2 months to a year. And we still have some ongoing experiments that are longer than a year. Some barrels, you know, some of the toast profiles take differently to the whiskey, and we really haven't mapped out if the warehouse makes any difference. Or, you know, everybody's say, well, if you put them in the wintertime, you know, it does maybe take a little bit longer when you put them in the wintertime because there's not a lot of action going on. So there's a lot of factors that go into it, but we're looking into all that, and you know, because this to me, and I think to a lot of people, it's kind of a new concept with just the char one. Secondary aging and
with another new barrel. You know, yeah.
Right. With another new barrel. And we're really looking into all that because definitely, I don't want it over oaked and we haven't found that yet to be. So,
well, Greg Schneider is watching it tonight and he had actually purchased, they had purchased some used barrel. They had whiskey aged in used barrels. And he felt that it wasn't up to standard. So the way that he got that is he double oaked it in a new charred oak barrel to bring the, you know, it was like the opposite, you know, it was a backwards, similar to what you're doing, but you're using two new, you know, so you could keep it to, it can stay bourbon in all, you know, manners. Now, if you're doing it fairly quick, what are you doing with the used barrels? I mean, they're slightly used, opposed to, you know, some of the barrels on the market have already made bourbon 6-7 years. That's a used barrel, but you're talking about 2 months to a year barrel. Is that where the American whiskey's coming into play that we're going to be trying tonight?
Well, yes, it's kind of twofold. Right now, we are just mass selling them. When we dump our barrels, there's a company that buys them, and we just load up tractor trailers, and they'll take it away. But our barrels are so, I think they are so young, have a lot of flavor left in them, and they're different flavor profiles from the different toast profiles. That I would love, definitely, once we get bigger, an arm of our company to say exactly where those barrels go, because I think there's something there.
Oh,
also we decided, you know, we kind of looked at the market and see that an American whiskey is an up and coming thing. So what we've done is we're going to use some of our used cooperage, and that's it. It's, you know, you obviously you can't call it a bourbon, you can't call it a rye, but we decided to come out with an American whiskey by still using those barrels that we've used before and use them again. And I think the American whiskey, when it comes out, it'll be out next month. And that's what we really wanted to talk about, is that I'm really looking forward to this American whiskey. It is in used cooperage, but it's our cooperage, so I know exactly, you know, what it's going to do to it. And I think it's a great product. We've got a little bit better price point on it, because we don't have that secondary barrel that we have to pay for again. So that's, you know, as a category of American whiskey, we look around the country, we see that, I think it's a up and coming market for sure.
CT.
Yeah. I think when, Barrelhead and I were there, that, when you brought that bottle out and we drank it, which is what I've been sipping on here since we started the live, it definitely hits a lot of good notes for me. It's probably not as sweet as some of the other ones on the palate for me, which I actually like, not being as sweet. Everybody knows I'm like anti-Amburana and all that, but the sweetness sometimes can overdo the flavor for me, and that I like the American whiskey a lot. So I don't know exactly what you got going on, but I think at whatever price point, which I think you said maybe under $50, that's going to be a home run bottle.
Well, that's what we're hoping for. And you know, to get into more of a daily drinker, and you know, times are tough. We try to keep things affordable as much as we can. Also, you know, that fits a groove for us on premise, you know, with some of the bartenders and getting more into the cocktail menus and things. It's real approachable. It stands up to what you're going to put on it. And you can try to keep it out of that $18 drink range, you know. So that's, you know, it serves a few purposes for us as well.
Well, I see American whiskey coming on because, one, it's more approachable to 90% of the market, which in my opinion is that bourbon market that buys the $20 bottle. It buys the Jim Beams, the Jack Daniels, and not the niche bourbon market, which is, you know, us crazy bourbon people going around waiting in line. That's not the majority of the market. So what you're talking about, you know, a $49 or $40 or whatever American whiskey, that's for the average whiskey drinker, which, you know, we always try and stress that's the major part of the market. And if you're producing a decent amount of whiskey this way without quite the strict rules and using the used barrels and being more productive overall, the American whiskey gives you more from either a sourcer or a distiller, more from a profit avenue, because you're using a barrel again. And so you're not, that's not that barrel cost and whatever. And then how long you're aging it. There's kind of not a rule for that, right? It's like, you know, a good, you know, you got straight bourbon at 2, and when you start to get in the 4, 6, 7 years, you know, those are, those bourbons are, that that's a lot of price, you know, value, where this is when it's ready, you know, whether it, like you said, if you get it in there a year or a year and a half, people aren't going to be criticizing it that, that it's young whiskey, because it's American whiskey. It's not young bourbon, you know, and you're just looking for flavor and taste, and that works. I mean, this, I, how, this is delicious. I mean, that's the first time I've had it. I waited, you know, to talk, to drink it with you, because, you know, CT had really played it up, but you know, it's delicious. It's the drinkability.
Well, absolutely. We're looking for drinkability. We wanted the flavors there. We wanted the quality there. And we figured out, you know, that we could do that and hit another aspect of the bourbon connoisseurs, you know, or the bourbon drinkers, and you know, and make it more, obviously make it more approachable. And always, like I said, you know, times are tough. We try to get it in a better price range.
So what was the proof CT on it?
The proof's 105, and that's what I was just hearing you talk about. Nice. Most of the time, your entry is stuff, you know, and we just went through this with another brand because they got scrutinized by a lot of people for the proof, and not that that means everything, because it doesn't. I mean, we've all drank 80, 90 proof stuff that was delicious, but I like the 105 proof point. I think it hits the flavors. It still gives you some of that that spice in the back, a little bit of the pepper, but not to the point of, oh my gosh, it's a heat bomb, but it still picks up all the other stuff.
Sure.
It's a,
again, you know, we had debated 80 proof. Obviously we could make a little bit more money if we went to 80 proof, but I don't think I'm there yet. You know, there I've drank some 80 proofs back from the 60s and 70s, and they're fabulous. But I don't think that distilling wise that we're there yet to get those types of flavors from that low a proof. And I just wasn't ready. We're just not ready to do that yet. I didn't really want to compromise flavor for proof. You know, I still think in ours it doesn't drink like it's 105. I don't think so. It's not like we're looking for that heat. We're just looking for flavor. And these days there's flavor and proof. You would kind of hard to deny.
100%. 100%. It's
if you're not willing to compromise and work towards the flavor and not compromise that too.
Well, let's hope I don't get voted down.
Well,
go ahead, Andy. What'd you say?
I just said the flavor is great. It's phenomenal. And then the price point, it's going to hit a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is, I think we talked about this, you know, Jason wasn't a part of our podcast, obviously, then, but we talked about stuff that we thought was going to change in the upcoming year for 2024. And I really feel like this is an avenue with that whiskey label that people can get away from just being a bourbon, that there's a lot of untouched stuff in the whiskey end of this. And maybe it's because of Jack Daniels that people don't get real involved in it. But I think that when you start comparing, especially this bottle that you've done, I just don't know how that's not a home run every day of the week.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, that's kind of what we're looking for. And, you know, a super, you know, a daily drink.
This honestly, if you didn't tell this is bourbon. I mean, I don't care what you say. It's 105 proof. It's got all the flavors of bourbon. I've tasted. So I can you go into exactly what it is, what you did to get to this point? I mean, I know you used a used barrel, but this particular American whiskey, or no?
It's basically our bourbon mash bill that we get, and it's put in used barrels. So
it's freaking bourbon. redone it. Okay. So now it didn't start from You didn't. It wasn't just distilled. It's not White Dog going into the used barrels. It's actually right. bourbon going into the barrel. So it becomes American whiskey because you're finishing it in the used barrel. Mm-hmm. But it's bourbon. Yeah, it's and then it's a barrel that
bourbon all the way up to that point.
finished in a bourbon barrel. That's what it is, right? So technically, it's bourbon finished in a used bourbon barrel. Yeah. So it never went away from it. So they should make a category for that. You do realize that, you know, if you finish in a port or you're finishing it in a rum, that's fine. You're changing it. That's a finish. But if you're going to finish it in another bourbon barrel, it should be allowed to still be bourbon. No, I don't care what you say. You're just blending using the barrel, right? But it's probably even the used barrel still had the same mash bill in it anyways, right? It's just a used barrel from another, its sister, right?
It's our used barrels. It's not another used barrel. Yeah. It's our specific used barrel.
So technically, it's like it's a mind. You're blowing people's minds right here. It's a mind fuck because you're just like taking the bourbon from the bourbon barrel. And then another one that and then you just put it in there. It's just like, and then somebody would be like, why?
Made the rules, right?
Right. But then you'd be like, why are you doing that? But then you taste it and you understand why.
You have to know the rules to bend them.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good analogy right there. You got to know the rules to bend them.
Jason, a question that somebody on Facebook is asking is Buzzard's Roost available in Wisconsin now?
Not yet. We are in 20 states. I could probably name them. It'd take a while, but mainly on the east side of Mississippi. We are in, let's see, I know we opened in Iowa. And we're in Illinois, so we're all around Wisconsin, I think.
Yeah, close enough that a little day
tripper
can go.
Yeah, go ahead to Galena area, and you can be in Illinois, Iowa, and Wisconsin, all within 15 minutes of each other, and visit. Yeah, and visit four different freaking liquor stores that all have different allocated things. It's just.
I actually go up to Galena or Apple Canyon every year I've been going for probably 30 years on a fishing trip up there.
But yeah, and Galena is such a beautiful city.
Also, I want to say that Tracy earlier had said that she was so glad that she stumbled upon your distillery past September, and she said she knew she should have bought two bottles of that barrel strength rye. But she did. So that's why she was asking the question if
where's Tracy from?
I think Wisconsin.
You know, and whether we have reciprocal states, if you go online, I believe you can order if you're in a certain state.
I think Wisconsin you can order from.
I think we're up to 35 states on that. So check online. You might be able to order it and hopefully they'll deliver it to your home.
She's from my hometown, Milwaukee, where I was born.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead. I got one more question.
Go ahead.
So Walker asked, is the number one char leaving you flavor left for the second run of whiskey as opposed to a number three or four char that will have nothing left afterwards?
Yes and no. I think the I'm trying to tell people that the easy way to do it is you know, I'm exaggerating, but if a number four char is this thick, a number one char is this thick, and what our processes do is we bring the sugars to the surface or change the compounds at the surface, you know, to get to that red layer. That's where all your wood sugars are. So what happens when you burn back, the char, but we've done all this work to toast and bring all the flavors to the surface. So when you're burning a char four, you're burning back the sugars you just brought to the surface. So it's almost counterproductive. So we think with the char one, it's much easier to get to those toasted layers, and those toasted layers you know, we feel that with the char one and our toast layers, between 4 and 6 years going to be spot on. It may, after 6 years, get past that and start getting tannic. You know, you start, like, consider a Pappy 20 year after it's got all the, you know.
Well,
it's used up all the flavor. It's getting to the tannins. We don't know that yet. We're still working on it. We're just the way we've got some whiskey aging now that is unbelievable, and it's only been in 2 years.
Yeah, that's where the char four comes in. If you're going to leave it in there 20 years, you know what I mean? Then it's got to really work its way into the wood before. But like what you're saying, you're putting already aged bourbon into those barrels. You don't need it to be going in deep, trying to get in deep. You want it to get the flavor as soon as possible, and then taste, you know, just keep tasting that barrel till it, you know, it's ready.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying,
already?
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah. We all artists, man. We go, you feel me? We gonna have this, like,
bro, me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit. I gotta lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
Right. And I think to answer his question, Jason, you would probably agree, the reason you do a number one char is not for the next use of it. It's for that use.
It's for our current use. And like I said, you know, now because of our situation, we're sourcing whiskey. But since we've got our still running and we have contracts this year from three different places to get new make. We're going to put new make right into char one barrels.
So are you at liberty to say which three places you're getting new make from?
Yeah, we're getting new make from MGP, BBC, and Green River, which.
Okay, which is, yeah, but still the same. Yeah, just two different places, same company, you know, but you're, yeah, that makes sense. So yeah. Okay.
It'll never see it. This year, we'll have new make that'll never see a char three or char four.
Perfect. I mean, I agree. I mean, I actually love toasted so much that I've asked if you got to actually put the char on and then just make it toasted if that counts, you know, to be bourbon. And I was informed that you can't do it that way. You actually have to char it. You can't just toast it. Although, you know, I love anything. My favorite is the toasted. Once you add those, you know, so even I don't know anybody who's doing it, but if you just put it, you take it and then you put it in a toasted barrel. But most people, if they're doing it, they're just, there's not many just toasted barrels out there. It's just that the wood was toasted before they charred it. So
maybe a toasted American whiskey with no char.
Oh, fuck yeah. Fuck. Wait, we just came up. I'm waiting for that. I will, on the day you release that, I will be there.
Well, we'll see what happens. You never know with this American whiskey run. We'll see what goes on.
Although I'm sure you're doing a lot of experimentation. So just invite me down for that one barrel that you're trying. I'll bring my whiskey thief and we'll try it.
Right. So a couple of other things about the lineup, and then, you know, I'll let Jason touch on it, just because in Ohio, I don't know about where Nash is at in South Carolina, what's there, but in Ohio, the char one rye and the char one bourbon are pretty available. I think that's what's on the shelf.
Yep.
And then we will see a barrel strength rye. I think that's out on the shelf in some of the stores in Dayton I saw this morning.
Yeah.
And then State of Ohio actually did an 8-barrel pick with you at the for our Single Barrel Friday here recently, just before Christmas. And this is one of those bottles. This was a single barrel bourbon, 115.2 proof that the OHLQ did. But again, there was 8 barrels that they did with you. So there's a lot of things going on. It's not just this, you know, this one thing coming out. You've got, you've kind of got a good stair step of things to go through.
Yeah, let me go through the lineup. Nash, did you have a question there?
Well, I was going to ask you about your mash bill, and is there any kind of history to your mash bills or and all, or and where you kind of came up with them from, or?
Not necessarily. We're using a 36% rye and also a little bit of a 21% rye from MGP. Okay. And then our ryes are 95.5. We've talked about mash bills and yeasts. And I'll start looking into that when we start putting new make in, which will be, the beginning of next year. As far as our mash bill on our still downtown, we'll talk about that process in a minute. That is a 70-21, 18 or whatever it comes out to be, 12, I mean.
Is that a pot still?
Well, it's a secondary. So we get first run, we get low wine from Green River, and we clean it up in our 70-gallon doubler or pot still.
Okay.
So we are doing some new make down there. We're physically cutting the heads and the tails, and
it's amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Pretty dang good.
That's
good. So just real quick, initially when you came into Ohio, I had never. It was a couple years ago, and it came out and it was released. And my guy was like, he sent me a picture of barrel strength Buzzard's Roost rye, and I am not a rye fan. Okay, now I found ryes that I like, but overall, if I get a rye and I like it, it kind of goes on the shelf afterwards, because as you know, you can't just be drinking all the bottles you get and whatever. So most of the time, if I'm going to drink something for recreational, besides tasting what I've been sent and all the samples that we get, I'm not reaching for a rye. But for some reason, my gut said, spend the money, get this rye. And I did. And actually, we did a podcast on it, but I absolutely loved it. I am not a fan of MGP 95.5 at all. But you pulled out the mint and the chocolate, not all those dill and those celery yucky flavors that 95.5 can have if you just throw it out there. And I basically was blown away at the barrel. And I love your barrel strength. Your flavors, you can tell on your barrel strength, because I've had at the festival and everything like that. When I drink your barrel strength, I don't ever feel like there's excessive amounts of pepper or too. It's not too hot. It's well thought out. There's lots of flavor. But overall, one of the things that I've always found on some barrel strengths is that if the heat or the pepper or whatever is too much, it drowns the flavor out. Like all of a sudden, that's all you're doing is drinking pepper. And yeah, I drank 125 proof and I'm having fun, but I can't taste anything. So that's not kind of what I'm looking for. But all of it, I can tell. Now, it's funny because when we were at Bourbon Bistro for the Alan Bishop experience that night, I noticed that you had the line of Buzzard's Roost, and I didn't actually put two and two together till I was doing the research for the podcast once CT said you were coming. So that's kind of cool to put two and two together, knowing that I drank some of that night too.
So I didn't really, I'm a bourbon guy. I really absolutely hated rye until we started the company. So that just goes to show you what the secondary maturation can do, or actually what our barrels in Char 1 can do.
Yeah, add that flavor.
This right here, hey Tiny, this right here is the one that we did the podcast on. That's that barrel strength rye.
Yep, I told
you. That's batch number 4 right there. This is that mint chocolate right there. That is so good, this mint chocolate. And yeah, I put that bottle back. And this is the only bottle that I was able to obtain. I was working today and was only able to go to just a couple of stores, smaller stores, and neither one of them just didn't happen to have any buzzard roost today. So, I did. I got onto them. So I was like, you know, and one of them, you know, was actually, you know, they own three or four stores across the upstate. So I was like, what? I said, like, you know, this guy, you know, he does a lot. And I said, you should have it. And then I educated them as to who you were and what we were doing tonight. And then he's like, well, I'm going to have to look into that. I said, yeah, you need to.
Oh, so, very good. So, that brings us to the lineup. And so we have three ryes and we have three bourbons. We have a char one, bourbon and rye. We have toasted bourbon rye, and then a barrel strength bourbon and rye. And those are our core, you know, those are our core SKUs or our core lineup. As we see, Barrelhead was holding up our cigar rye. So we also, every quarter, we'll bring out something different. We have what we call an LTO or a limited time offering. We brought out the cigar rye this last fall. We have French oak that we've done. We have a smoked barrel that we've done. So we come out with the American whiskey is going to be a little bit of a trial run for right now, see how it goes. I don't know whether that's going to make the shelf all the time or it's going to be an LTO. We'll bring it out once a year or something. But we've got an array of products that we bring out once a month just to kind of revisit the core six. Or once a quarter, I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're all great. And I think that's the thing that we want to do with the podcast is bring that brand awareness to people, consumers who are, you know, we say it all the time. You walk into a liquor store and or whatever, and there's hundreds and hundreds of choices, and you see these bottles, you don't know what they are. And, you know, if you're going to spend $40 to $80 on something, you kind of want to know if it's any good. So, you know, that's, I think the thing is people hear about certain brands and they go get in line and wait for it. But, you know, bringing awareness to your brand, this is a bottle that if they sell it in your state, which it's in 20 states, you can walk in and usually buy it and have the opportunity to have a really, really good bottle of bourbon or American whiskey. And know a little more of what it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's the purpose of these podcasts. I love doing them. And we always call it putting liquid to lips. We love to get out and do tastings and see the bartenders and people on the front lines and people like you guys who are whiskey enthusiasts that obviously spread the news. And, you know, we hope that we're staying on track and getting good feedback from you guys. So I think we're on the right track, but we're always looking to twist the screws and make it a better product as well. So positive feedback, even negative feedback, I mean, it's not going to hurt my feelings, you know? So
just you make whiskey or you were doing, you understand that you just can't make a whiskey that every single person loves. There's going to be the lovers and the haters. I mean, there's so many different palate types, but you know, I always tell people it's not about what I like. It's about what you like. And there's enough bourbon out there to not have to drink something you don't like. You know what I mean? Even though if someone tells you it's good or whatever, but at the same time, I really think in this case, you're onto something as far as what you know. I mean, that's probably out of all the American whiskeys that I've tasted or Frontier whiskeys, all the stuff that I've tasted or even whatever. I think that was, oh, we got some howling. That's awesome. That to me, 100% is part of it. You know what I mean? That's the experience. I wanted to ask you a question about, you know, you evolved. And so as a podcast, we evolve, you know what I mean? And so one of the things, you know, you when you get to be friends with all the distillers like you were through the restaurant, and you get to know all the people, and you get to experience so many different people. And some people are like, you know, there's some places where I was like, well, I could get a job there. Or, you know, some of the podcasts, they actually make their own brand. But what I love about doing the podcast is meeting all the different people. So once you and interacting with all the different people and drinking whiskey with all the different distillers and meeting people like yourself, I love that part. And if you did your own brand, you're just going to, you know, all of a sudden, not that it's competitive. I mean, I understand it's not competitive, but then you have to focus on your brand and producing that. Did you miss that aspect once you went into the brand and now you have your brand and you're doing it in kind of, did it shrink to like now who you know or whatever, or is it still as expansive?
You know, I mean, that's a great question. I feel it's a little different. I feel that, there's a little competition between everybody out there, but it's a big, huge, I call it a big, huge family, a big bourbon community, and everybody's in it for everybody else, you know. Bill Samuels always talks about the piece of the pie, and everybody's got their piece. We all just want to grow the pie. You know?
Right, right.
To make your piece bigger and not necessarily take it from your neighbor, you know. But yeah, I mean, since I stepped back from Bourbon's Bistro and kind of got on this, you know, doing a lot of traveling and whatever, it does seem a little bit different. And maybe I'm just on a different level. I don't know that I don't think anybody's treating me any different. It's all the same, but it does feel a little bit different. Just, I'm not sure how, but
it's like, you got to put your attentions into that. You know what I'm saying? Where, right now, if I'm putting my attention into the podcast, but part of the attention is putting it into all the different people. You know what I mean? Every podcast that you do and meeting people like yourself. I mean, I would love to come down with the group, and right from your new, you know, you could talk about your new tasting room. That's just recent. And do a podcast right there to keep promoting what you're doing in Ohio, you know, to Ohio. Because I really feel like what CT said, the big part of doing this is when somebody just comes out and they don't put the effort in, let's say that you don't come up to Ohio, you just put it on the shelf. People don't know what it is yet. You know what I mean? They look at it, and what are you going to buy if you don't know what it is? And but you've seen one of something, and you kind of got to know the person through the interview, and you like their story. You're going to pick that up opposed to something that you never saw anything about that person, right?
I would think so, and hopefully, once, like I said, once they get a taste of it, it's all about the whiskey, but. I don't necessarily want it to be about me. It's about the whiskey. And I guess coming back to what you were saying, it is kind of weird because, you know, all my friends in the whiskey business will say, hey, man, I was at Bourbon's and I didn't see you. I was like, yeah, I'm on the road now.
Yeah.
you know, when I used to be there, you know, a couple days a week, at least, you know, see somebody on a Friday or Wednesday night. And it's like, yeah, man, I'm on the road. Sorry, I missed you. You know, so it is a little different seeing people there, and then maybe seeing them at the New Orleans Bourbon Fest, or you know, it's just, it is a little different.
So you said that back when you had the restaurant, that you would have distillers come in and do tastings and stuff. Have you done that for yourself yet?
Have I done a tasting at my restaurant? No. Not for Buzzard Drew. Well, I still do a lot of charity things, and you know, I know about a lot of other whiskey. So, you know, when you know, if I'll do a charity thing and it's donated from Bourbon's Bistro, I'll go do other whiskeys, and of course I'll add mine in there. And it's a small part of the story, but you know, I do talk about other whiskeys. Sometimes it could be an exclusive Buzzard Drew's tasting at Bourbon's, but you know, usually if, I don't do them as often as I used to. I used to do tastings quite a bit more often there. But now that, you know, I've got, I donate to charities every year and this, that, and the other. And I'll do an array of whiskeys. And of course, I'll add one, usually one of mine, maybe two.
I want to get. Yeah, that's great. Speaking of other people in the industry, Barry Briniger is watching. He says, "What's up?" Everybody knows.
Hey, happy birthday, Barry.
Jason, you have a little bit thinner beard compared to Barry's.
pulling on mine, stressing out.
We had one comment that this was in 2023, one of your bottles was her favorite bottle of the year. And Barry commented that he likes, his favorite is the bourbon finished in the char one.
That's what I'm going to be drinking right now. That's the bottle you sent my way. So, so let's just quick talk about the different, the bourbon. This is the source bourbon that you've taken, and then you've taken a new barrel that you've drummed up from Independent Stave, correct? And with just a char one, and then put it in. Now, you do this every year, obviously. This is one of your staples that you just keep doing and making different batches. Now, from batch to batch, has there been a big difference, or are you looking for consistency?
Oh, obviously, we're looking for consistency, but we do pick out some single barrels that definitely stand out to us. So I'm going to try to explain why I think ours is a little bit more consistent. So I take the circle up at the top. If you take MGP up here at this big line, and then we blend that together, and then we put it in a series of our barrels, and then we blend that together. And so at the bottom of this cone, you're getting a more consistent product because I know what flavors our barrels, this recipe of barrels is going to put on the whiskey. So we know what we're getting. We don't start with bad whiskey for one. We start with great whiskey from MGP. We'll blend some of that together, depending on what we're doing, put that in a series of barrels and then blend that. I think at the end of the day, you get to the bottom of this cone that you're going to have a more consistent product.
I would say the fantastic part of this, that's this char one that you're picking out, is the amount of vanilla. I'm picking up it's a ton of vanilla, and it's not where you pick it up normally. Normally you'll pick up a lot of vanilla on the front palate coming in the tip. This is the back palate and into the finish that you're picking up a lot of the vanilla, which is very, very unique. Now, sometimes if you go vanilla, it can go like I always say, that it goes kind of flat. But there's enough wood spice, oak spice, like it's like there to make it not flat. And that's a real nice thing that you got going there. It's delicious.
Our secondary barrels. The secondary finishing barrels, they range anywhere from sweet to smoky to spicy and everything in between. At a certain time and a certain temperature through our research, there's a lot of lignin in oak. And oak is a really great wood. At a certain time and a certain temperature, lignin actually transforms into vanillin. Vanillin is a big component, vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at these charts as it goes along. You see this lignin, 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 and boom, the vanillin goes through the roof. So what do we stop the process? So I know that this barrel will impart vanillin or vanilla flavor onto the whiskey that's in there.
So I do know a little bit of what I'm talking about by what my tasting notes were, right?
there's a lot of science that goes into what we do, and you know, I love the art at the end of it is blending it. But there's a lot of science behind what we do.
as which modern technology, I've always contended, if you just take somebody who's not an artist or somebody who doesn't appreciate flavors or tastes, and you just, they're scientists or whatever, and they go by charts, modern distilling can happen, but you're going to get a certain flat line on it. But if you take modern distilling techniques and you combine them with somebody who understands what they're trying to do, an artist, somebody who's tasted bourbon when it was made one way or understands how it used to be made, understands how it can be made now, and then just use it to improve to make what they're doing, it just makes the ability to achieve something that would have been really hard to achieve 40 years ago. Now you have control to achieve it and then achieve it consistently. It's kind of a cool thing.
Absolutely. My business partner, I mean, I've been in the, like I said, I started a restaurant when I was 21 and we're in restaurants before that. So I've been in the food industry my whole life and looking for those flavors. And my business partner as well, Judy, she was in quality control with a major food company. And so, yeah, we both have those palates that pay attention to that. And you're right about talking about the technology of, you know, from tasting whiskey back in the day. Why did it taste different than it does today? And how can we get back to that point?
So anybody, go ahead, CT.
No, I was going to say, I know we don't have a ton of time left, but there is, other than talking about that part of it, you started talking about the, what gives it that vanilla flavor. And that's the one thing I thought that was really cool when we came down there is the tastings and tour that you do in Louisville that take you down that road. You've told us about barrel toasting and char one and all that, but you have a very unique tour and tasting compared to anything else I've seen. And I've been to a gazillion distilleries. Talk about that a little bit.
Slideshow is great.
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of what we, you know, we're out to educate for one. And just to give, I mean, there's a ton of distilleries out there. We know that everybody's been, and I've been on them as well. We just wanted to obviously do a little something different, give the regular, even everything from a bourbon nerd to a bourbon knowledge or novice, just a unique tasting and something they could learn from if they wanted to, and just be a little different from the regular mash bill and everything. Like I said, I don't think that people have delved into the wood like we do. We're all about, you know, we kind of call ourselves, we like to think we're trying to be experts in maturation. You know, everybody uses grains and we know we use, try to use the best grains. And we know that there's a big deal in, about yeast and all of that. But once again, it comes back to that 70% at least of a flavor comes from the wood. That's where we kind of spend our time. That's where we want to educate people about, you know, people like yourselves and people out there. They've all been to these distilleries and they love them and that's great. But, you know, we're trying to give a little aspect of almost behind the curtain that a lot of people don't see or don't realize.
Yeah.
Well, and you have a very unique thing that you take people through on your tour. And I think I made the reference when Andy and I were there that Jeff and I did this on the car on the way to Galena. That's the nosing kits that you take people through on your tour.
Right. We do have some sensory kits and we don't really like to say tour. We like to say experience.
All right.
My fault. It's not Kings Island or Disney World.
Well, no, right. No, because yeah. People on a tour are expecting more. You're like, what is this? You got to still let me show us.
I think you're completely wrong on that. You said an experience. I'm expecting way more on an experience. I'm like, an experience is like there's something. I get some of that tour. I'm just looking at things. The experience, I'm getting something. So.
Like CT was saying, it's more of an experience than it is a tour, because there's really not a lot to look at. We've got a still, we've got a tasting room, we've got a classroom. We do some videos, we show people, we educate people, but we do have some sensory things that we do as far as your nosing, your palate. We have some food items that we pair them with. We have a chocolate class that we teach and we do comparison with. So, it's a lot of sensory and it's a lot of learning what you're looking to smell or taste.
Well,
it's more of an experience.
That's totally awesome, especially for a lot of times you get these bourbon enthusiasts, whether it be the man or the woman, they come in to these bourbon experiences and they bring their significant other and they don't know very much about it. Well, here it is. Now they get a chance for them to get educated and learn and then fully get into the experience. And this is the way to do it and bring them into it and bring them in as a partner. And then all of a sudden now, instead of having one bourbon enthusiast, you've got two bourbon enthusiasts. And what better way to do it than at Buzzard's Roost?
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. I like that.
I'm just going to tell you, Rolo and the Char 1 is a fantastic pairing. So,
yeah, sparred him on the
this is Jason, this is from somebody who consistently keeps pouring bourbon over breakfast cereals. Yeah. It's insane. And then he sits there and they all, and then he does it with couples, and then they all talk about how awesome it is. And while I'm just doing I watch it, I just put puke emoji, puke emoji, puke emoji.
The chocolate with all of it is fantastic.
So
at least he's got it good over the breakfast here. I have to say this: when I were younger, we didn't have it so good. So we used to have to eat our cereal with a fork so we could reuse the milk.
He does have it pretty good, don't he?
Yeah, for sure. So I am pouring the. I haven't had the number one char. Rye. So this is a big thing for me. I had your barrel strength and loved it. So,
you know, the thing that, like you said, Jeff, the ryes, I think, have that mint, have a little bit of that chocolate. I think the Char 1 rye, I don't get as much chocolate, but the mint is there.
But, so on the nose, there's a little bit of dark chocolate, but very minty, almost grapey.
Like, good. Not off-putting. It's
No.
Doesn't go that dill pickle grassy note that I can't deal with.
No. Rich barrel.
Jason, the I wood. Have a question for you. While these guys are talking about that, you had mentioned earlier at the first of the show that you probably did close to 100 barrel picks for the restaurant. All right. Do you do any single barrel program for Buzzard's Roost yet? Or do you have any plans on doing a single barrel program?
Yes, we do. We've done several. So we love doing them. And like I said, Ohio came down and they They were going to pick. They had eight to pick from.
Okay.
And
they bought all eight.
We thought we were going to sell four, and they're like, we'll just take all eight.
Yeah.
So that was a great day.
Did you get to meet Jim that day? Canepa? No.
It's been so long ago. I would assume if he's on the board or.
He's moved to the other side. We call it the other side, the newly passed law side. But at the same time, he was head of the. Our whole liquor, you know, department, and he's a bourbon fan, so I've picked with him. But that sounds about right. We did a pick, and there was I think we chose 30 from 36 barrels, and we ended up taking 31 of them. I went with it. So, yeah, that's about right. The state of Ohio has so many different palates. They're just looking for good whiskey. If it's good whiskey, they understand it might not be this guy's palate, but it's this guy's palate. There's some people who love seagrass. I mean, you know, Barrelcraft seagrass, they absolutely love it. I can't stand it, but at the same time, people love it. So when you're picking for a whole state, you got to cover everybody, right? And that's probably what you did. actually, on this
other part of my question is, all right, so obviously you do, and so that was like opened up to the states. Now, do you do like individual, like group picks, like the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, or individuals, or like store picks?
Absolutely, if we can clear it through a store legally.
Okay. Oh yeah, it's the state of Ohio. We could clear it through. We have a place to do it. Hey Nash, if you're like trying to get a barrel pick, you're pitching in, right? You're gonna help out, pay. Yeah, okay, that's fine because I'm all for that. If you're pitching in, so far it's all been me.
I think Nash is buying the barrel.
We just have to sell it for him. No, I
think my next question was going to be.
So Jason, I'll give you in a sec ability to give a promotion as far as getting people down to see you. We're going to keep pushing it in Ohio. This has been fantastic. The whiskey that you're putting out, I love what you're doing as far as how you blew my mind. You know, because you're doing something, everybody likes to do something a little different, but you know, sometimes you're not sure. You're going, well, this is like fantastic, the way that you're taking it. So it's a great idea. You can tell you've been in it a long time and it's been well thought out. So, you know, love, I just want to let you know, I love what you're doing. And, I guess when I go to my local liquor store in the next couple of weeks, I'll be buying up a couple more of the other, you know, some of the stuff I don't have that I can get. Especially, I know the OHLQ pick, there's a couple left out there, and I'll probably pick those up too. So great to have you on. CT, do you have anything to add?
I have one question that I think that is kind of works for the end of this, and that is... why buzzards roost?
There you go.
That's a great question. You know, I said we had tried to start a distillery and fell a little short. But I think we actually got to about the 10-yard line. We had some investors lined up and really
not like the Packers.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to die.
We actually had a farm picked out, a beautiful place out in Waddy, Kentucky. And, we had set on that that's where we were going to have the distillery. And when everything went south, the road bordering that farm is called Buzzard Roost Road. And I said, you know, it had to stick. And it seemed like my partner hated it at first. And then we found a great guy to do our label and it came out great. And I also wanted something that sounded old. I wanted it to sound like it'd been around since the 1900s. New innovation in the old school, because I'm kind of traditional, that I just wanted something that sounded like it'd been around forever, and I didn't want to revive an old brand. So Buzzard Roost for me kind of fit that bill. And there was a story behind it. Maybe one day we'll get to farm, but... it was from that road called Buzzard Roost Road.
That's awesome.
Well, if things keep going the way they are in the whiskey industry, you'll get there. So all roads lead where they lead, and a lot of people go through those. One of the Middle West spirits up here, this is the fifth distillery Ryan Lang has built. He's done four before this and he's been craft, but this time he's building basically Jim Beam in Ohio. And that road of those years was a road well traveled that you learned so much, but the demand for the juice And I don't like to call it juice, but the demand for the liquid is so intense that, you know, you develop the brand opposed to before you develop the brand. You've got the brand developed. It's eventually the, and now you've got the still. Now, what is your production at that, on that still at the?
Our still, we do maybe a barrel every 2 days.
So you're like starting out like on the limestone branch level, where at first they were a barrel, then they went to one, and then, you know, and everybody thinks, well, Yellowstone, well, Yellowstone doesn't get distilled in limestone branch, but, you know, overall it's, I think you're going about it right. Just, you know, that's one thing that whiskey does do is stand the test of time, right? We're in this bourbon and whiskey boom. And this is the time where the brands have to be established, and they have, this is the time where all the new distilleries have to come in. And this is the time when all the old distilleries have to be updated because of what's going on, because we all know eventually, because it's an ancient thing, that there'll be a downturn. It just, that's just no way around it. I mean, that's just, you look at history, it goes up and down. But at the time we're in this boom, and I'm having a damn good time, and I'm hoping it lasts the next 20 years. And if it does, we're all in a good place, right?
Absolutely. Top to bottom. I mean, that's quality, flavor profile. You nailed it.
Thank you. Really appreciate that.
I finished that rye, so just tells you that I like it. So give us your spiel, you know, tell everybody how to get down to you, where you're at on Whiskey Row, and you know what, you know, just, you know, give us the polished up thing that you've been giving everybody for a little bit.
I don't know. It's that polished. we opened on Whiskey Row down at 624 West Main in Louisville, Kentucky. We've got a little still down there. We're tasting room. Come take a class. Get educated about it. You know, or just come and have fun. You know, hang out. We're on all the platforms, and we actually do ship across the country. So check out our website. And other than that, just, you know, what is it? Sit and sip a while.
Like I said, I enjoyed the experience of the slides that you showed. I mean, that broke down the barrel, the scientific side of things. You guys do a great job.
Thank you.
I can't wait to get there. You go, CT.
Hey, I mean, I think that when you go downtown Louisville, like I have so many times on a Friday, it's insane. It's nice having a place like Jason's here to go. And they have a great bar. If you've seen the pictures I posted, there's some great pictures of it. But definitely worth the stop and sit down at the bar, try a few things, get a flight. If you have time, take a tour. But great facility, and I can't say enough about it. I'm excited to get back down there.
How about you, Nash?
I'd just like to say cheers to what Jason has said so far. And I can't wait to get up there and check it out in the next couple of months. And also earlier about what Tiny said about we're going to keep pushing this out through Ohio. No, we're going to keep pushing this out across the whole United States and overseas as much possible, because we have listeners everywhere now. And we're going to do as much as we can to promote you, because we like what you're doing. And thanks again for coming on tonight. And cheers, my friend.
Cheers to that.
All right. So we're going to go ahead.
I'm going to tasting up our way with you guys also.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
sure. We'll get up there this year.
Okay, so let us finish up the podcast real quick. And then once we're finished up, can you hang on for another like 5-10 minutes? You got time? Okay. All right, everybody. We're the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. www.scotchybourbonboys.com for all Scotchy Bourbon Boys things. Make sure that you follow us on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and X. Also, all the major podcast formats. But just remember, like, listen, comment, and subscribe, and make sure you leave us good feedback wherever you listen to us. Remember, good bourbon and whiskey equals good times and good friends. Make sure you drink responsibly. Don't drink and drive, but mainly go out and live your life dangerously. Little Steve-O is going to take us out.
Thanks everybody for watching YouTube and Facebook.
Oh, show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. For if we don't find the next whiskey bar, I tell you we must die. I tell you we must die. I tell you, I tell you, I tell you we must die.
Hey, Scotchy Bourbon Boys fans, this is Alan Bishop, Indiana's Alchemist of the Black Forest. So I'm tuning in here today to tell you all about the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute channel on YouTube. If you're at all interested in the art of distilling, whether it be home distilling or professional distilling, and the intense geekery that goes into that process, then check out the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute on YouTube. I promise you're going to learn something you didn't know before about the arts.